Blog Talk Radio.
So this is Christmas.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host Ed in San Antonio, and I'm today joined by neither of my co-hosts as they are currently running late, and somehow the theme music screwed up, so I had to shut that off. But anyway, welcome to Over the Top Radio, the second show of the new year, and we will be talking about the Ultimate Warrior tonight, since he has been announced to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. We will also be talking about the upcoming Royal Rumble, and we will also be talking about the late, great Mae Young. Now, it would help if my co-host would call in and help me out, but apparently they have other things to do right now. So I'm not entirely sure what I should even start with, but I will go ahead and say that I am very happy that the Ultimate Warrior is going into the WWE Hall of Fame this year, because I know he gets, it's actually like the cool thing to make fun of the Ultimate Warrior. Oh, the Ultimate Warrior sucked. Oh, the Ultimate Warrior couldn't work. Oh, the Ultimate Warrior couldn't cut a promo. But for a time, the Ultimate Warrior was the coolest thing in the world. Now, I'm sure my co-host that I'm about to introduce will totally disagree because he was a bad worker. So that makes everything about the Ultimate Warrior suck. So, Craig, what's up, Craig?
Late greetings and salutations, Edward.
Greetings, Craig. I can barely hear you. Could you speak up a little bit louder?
Sure. How is that?
It's actually the same. It's probably a problem on my phone. We are still waiting for our other co-hosts who demanded that we do this show and didn't give us a choice, and he can't even bother to show up.
Well, now, this will make for an interesting
show. Oh, actually,
show.
Here he is, so let me introduce him. What's going on, Kutcher?
Not much. Let's get show on the road. Let's do the thing.
Okay. Well, I was hoping to play some Ultimate Warrior music, but I don't see it on the switchboard.
Well, we're not doing a whole show on him, so no.
Lazy. Anyway, I pretty much did before you guys called in, because both of you guys are running late, I did pretty much talk about what we were talking today, but I will let Contreras, since it was his idea, to start off what we want to talk about this week.
I thought we were just going to do news.
Well, let's do news then.
Well, I sent a message saying we're going to mix it all in.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that message.
I wasn't even paying attention, so.
Well, there you go. It was on Facebook. I put in caps, so you know.
The only thing I saw in caps was that it was, we're doing this, the show you wanted to do, and that was it.
That means we're doing the show I wanted to do, and that's it.
Well, let's start on something, guys. Come on, help me out here.
Oh, I'm going to go look at news. Hang myself or something. Christ.
You can't do that. Well, yeah. Let me.
I sent Craig a bunch of shit. And I was mad.
Yeah, you
did. I had to send it to him twice. So I'm doing it on my Kindle Fire. And I'm sitting there, you know, I'm putting an email together. I'm typing. And all of a sudden, the screen view changes and it hits send on accident when I'm going to punch a letter. And it fucking pissed me off. That letter threw me on the board, too, and I got to hurry up and edit my stuff if somebody gets on there and calls me stupid.
Well, your technical problems aside, let's pick a subject and let's go ahead and get this show on the road.
Does that make you?
Yes.
I see. You didn't quite give me quite enough time to pull up my email, so...
I figured you'd be prepared since the show, you know, started at 6 o'clock your time.
Well, I was running a little bit late, as you know. I figured we'd shoot the breeze for a few minutes because we don't have a lot to talk about. Let's be honest. It's been, I mean, last week was all the news week, and this week not so much. But, no.
Actually, there's been
some
big news stories this week.
Yeah, a few. Maybe I jumped the gun on that. But, yeah. Anyway, let's since you were talking about the Ultimate Warrior, let's go back to talking about the Ultimate Warrior. He's being inducted into this year's WWE Class of 2014 Hall of Fame.
And like I said, I am very excited for this because the Ultimate Warrior, I don't care what anybody says, is freaking cool as shit and always has been and always will be. Even when he was talking about how queering doesn't make the world go around. But basically, the
I hope people get the title of the show and don't think I'm being like...
No, I totally.
Okay.
Even I understood that.
Yeah, I got it, but I'm sure there's probably...
It's just fun to say queering. It's one of those things. Fun to say that word.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
The older members of our audience would understand it, and our younger members of the audience would probably think that the Peach Machine was co-hosting this week.
Aside from the... When he beat Hogan in the Sky Dome, I think queering don't make the world work. It's like the most famous thing he's ever done.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. But let's go back to the very beginning. The Ultimate Warrior basically started in a four-man group, and one of the members was Steve Borden, a.k.a. Sting, and the other two guys, I don't remember their names at all. I know, I don't even remember the guy who trained him. Do you remember who trained him?
Rick Bassman.
Bassman, that's right. Yeah, Rick Bassman. And weren't the other guys, like, kind of ethnic? Didn't he, like, kind of want to have, like, a different look, like, for all four of them? And weren't they called, like, Power Team USA or something?
Yeah, Power Team USA. And
yeah.
I think one of them ended up, like, didn't have really much of a career, but, like, he went under the name, like, on some of the small shows, like, under the name Carmine Albano as Captain Lou's nephew or something like that. Sawyer read that after May one time.
Okay. I don't.
Which I had to
have
read it because that's what I come up with it. So.
Yeah. So, basically, Val Bassman trained them, and I would imagine they did some shows out in the West Coast, but as far as, I guess, their major promotion they work with is they did some matches in Memphis for a short time, and then they went to Mid-South for a short time, and I got to see them once or twice because we would get Mid-South kind of off and on. We got pretty much all of the UWF, but Mid-South we got off and on. Like, it'd be on for a few weeks, and then it wouldn't be on for a week or two, and then it'd be on. So I did get to see them a little bit. Didn't really get to see much because they were always in the main event, and, you know, the main event always ended in 2 fucking minutes on Mid-South. It always used to just piss me off. I guess maybe it was smart marketing and made me want to come back next week, but when that show was over, I was off, dude.
I've got there because I've been watching a lot of Memphis. I saw, like, some of the first stuff they ever did in Memphis. And this was before they were the Blade Runners. They were just Jim Helwig and Steve Borden, the Power Team USA. And after doing this promo with Lance Russell, they're saying, and Jim Helwig's talking about, you know, you got about, we're better than most people around here. You got nothing but a bunch of fat guys around here. So Phil Hickerson comes out and cuts this promo on them. And said, he's as tough as any man in a promotion, and he doesn't have to stick a needle in his butt to be tough. So.
That's funny. Back in the days, you usually get some steroid references. Like,
I remember
Michael Hayes versus Kerry Von Erich being on steroids, and I remember Colonel De Beers referencing Scott Hall being on steroids.
I look back at that stuff, and my God, Sting was fucking huge back then. You can tell he got
He was much bigger back then. He had about maybe 25, 30 pounds more muscle back then.
Yeah, I mean, he was just enormous. Considering how he became later. Like, I think Watts told him, Watts didn't want a warrior, he got rid of him. But he wanted Sting to stay because he saw potential in him. He told him to put down on the juice, but it didn't.
And yeah, I think he didn't like Warrior because Warrior would complain, or Warrior was kind of a little bit of a diva for his position or time in the business. So yeah, they got
that's pretty much been proven over the years.
Yeah, and his name was, what was it? There was Blade and Rock.
Yeah, it was. I think maybe they did like maybe one or just like a couple matches that became the Blade Runners in Memphis, and I think it might have been Blade and Rock, but then it changed to Sting and Rock in the UWF. So.
Yeah, that's right. And then when he left the UWF, he changed his name to the Dingo Warrior and added some face paint to his face. And he luckily for him, he went to World Class at a period when you know, the talent wasn't as big. You know, David and Mike were gone. Kerry was either
hurt.
You know, hurt at times or not always there. Kevin was still there a little bit, but you know, it was a time where he was able to come in and still become a main eventer, which was hard to do. You know, in years earlier with the Von Erichs. So he became he wrestled. But didn't he defeat for the title? Was it Rude?
He didn't defeat anybody for what title? He didn't hold the world title or the heavyweight title.
I thought he did. But
I think he held the Texas heavyweight title. I know that. And he and Lance Von Erich held the tag belts.
I just know that like him and Kerry Von Erich became friends, and when they were in the WWE, I think Kerry Von Erich might have been his only friend.
I think he's really good friends with Lance too, I think.
Okay. And he really caught my eye when he did go to World Class. I mean, because, you know, when it comes to bodies, I mean, at the time, he was jacked like a motherfucker. And he was green as shit. But it's one of those where, like, the guy's green, but he's still, I don't know how to explain it, but he just, like, caught my eye. I mean, I was like, wow, this guy could be a star.
He's got it, I think, is what he probably had. You know how Sid had it just standing there? It's a bunch of
the
same
time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then after a while, he went to the WWF as the correct me if I'm wrong. Was he ever anything other than the Ultimate Warrior? Was that always his name in the WWE?
The only thing, I think he might have just been the Dingo Warrior when they were doing house shows right at the start when he wasn't on TV for a few months. They were just like on the feet, on the feet tours, you know, with the feet thing. Because they were doing like three shows a night back then. And I think he was just Dingo Warrior right there when they were starting him off. But, yeah, they had the Road Warriors. They had the Modern Day Warrior, Kerry Von Erich, so they had to make somebody totally better, so they called him the Ultimate Warrior, which is actually the name of Bad News Brown in Stampede, I think.
Oh, really? Wow. I will
say
that if you want to look back at Survivor Series teams, the greatest and most ultimate Survivor Series team is the Warrior team of the Ultimate Warrior, the Modern Day Warrior, and the Road Warriors.
Yeah, that was... Match wasn't much, but you hear that team, it sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, that was like a wet dream just hearing that.
when he first came in, they were doing those six-man tags at the Demolition against he and the Road Warriors?
Road
Warriors came in.
Yeah. I will say this, it's between him and Brock's music for best theme music ever. And he had one of the greatest entrances of all time. I mean, he just come out running all balls out. He'd hit that ring. He'd grab them ropes. And fuck Dave Bautista. No one grabbed them ropes better than the Ultimate Warrior and started shaking them. And goddamn, that was, like, fucking awesome. Now, Craig, you've been quiet up until now. Let's hear your complaints about the Ultimate Warrior.
Well, I don't have a lot of complaints about the Ultimate Warrior. I have a few, but not a lot. No, I was just letting you guys riff because, you know, you guys are doing fine without me, and I didn't know a lot about the Dingo Warrior. I first saw the Dingo Warrior when I was thumbing through an After Mag, to be honest with you, because we didn't get World Class or any of those other places. So, yeah, just thumbing through an After Mag, probably Pro Wrestling This Week or The Wrestler or one of those, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, one of those, and saw the guy, and as Katrera was talking about, looked like he had it. He definitely did. I mean, he looked like a monster and didn't think much about it until he showed up in WWE. Don't have a lot of complaints about the Warrior. He was one of my favorites when I was a kid. And why wouldn't he be? He was when
he looked like a combination rock star, superhero.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
Just, especially at that time in the late 80s, early 90s, I mean, you know.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I mean, he was just perfect. The music, you know, the loud music, he would sprint down to the ring and dive in the ring and just shake the snot out of the ropes. And he was just a wild man. I mean, it was an impressive entrance.
The entrance was more, to me, well, unless it was like, you know, a major main event, the entrance, I mean, if it was just a squash match, let's be honest, the majority of the matches back then in WWE were squash matches. The entrance was more than the match itself.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christ, he was so blown up by the time he got there when the bell rang, couldn't do shit. No wonder he was
banned. Blowed up. I remember seeing him on a house show in Tacoma. The main event was supposed to be Andre the Giant against the Ultimate Warrior. And music hit. He came down. He got up on the ring apron. He shook the ropes and did that in all four sides of the ring. He stepped into the ring. The bell rung. He hit the ropes on one side, he hit the ropes on the other side, he hit Andre with a flying shoulder tackle and pinned him 1, 2, 3, and the music hit and he ran out, and I swear this took less than 4 minutes.
Yeah, I was reading about that stuff. I remember I first read about him beating like Andre like in 30 seconds all over the country. I read about that in the Astro Magazine. I said, well, they must think something of him, you know, letting him beat the Giant.
Yeah.
Because nobody was beating the Giant back then except Hulk Hogan.
I think Bobby Heenan tells the story, though, that Ultimate Warrior was a little out of control and was kind of hitting Andre kind of hard. So one time when he came off the ropes, Andre stiffed him really good. And after that, Warrior lightened up on him on the rest of the shows.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, basically his moves consisted of basically he would do that where he would hit both ropes and hit the shoulder tackle. He would also do, like, maybe about four clotheslines. And then he would lift the guys up into the press slam, but he wouldn't press slam. He just dropped them straight down and then hit a splash.
Yeah. Still one of my favorite matches.
Had,
I mean, that match with Hogan at Skydome was still like one of my favorite matches of all time. I thought
that was a good match.
I mean, I thought it was one of the best book matches of all time in later years. If you think about it, I mean.
Yeah, it's one of the best. It's one of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time, and this match is a perfect example of why Pat Patterson is a fucking wrestling genius when it comes to booking matches. I mean,
yeah.
He took two guys who were not great workers, who were kind of slow, you know, so and so, and he booked this perfect 5-star match. And I will call it a 5-star match just because of the drama and everything that was with it, and the crowd had a lot to do with it. The crowd was awesome. It was like 50-50. One guy had a giant Hogan cardboard standing. Another guy had an Ultimate Warrior standing like that. It was, everything about that match was just, to me, was booked perfectly. You know, Hogan was so strong because he got a visual pin before it was over. And then, you know, when Ultimate Warrior won, when he freaking kicked out of the leg drop, I mean, no one had ever kicked out of the leg drop.
He didn't kick
out of
the leg
drop. Not that I ever remember.
He didn't kick out of it. He avoided it. He moved. And then he hit
the splash. That's right. Yeah, my bad. But still, you know, when Hogan was going for the leg drop, you know, I mean, you pretty much think it's over and he's winning. And then, boom, Ultimate Warrior hits the splash and gets the pin count. It was freaking awesome.
And then Hogan being the genius he is, he takes the spotlight at the end. That was awesome. He got so much sympathy. I think he got over more in that match than Ultimate Warrior did.
Well, it's Hogan, brother. That's what he does.
He really is, dude.
I mean, Hogan takes a lot of flack, but, I mean, the dude knows how to promote himself and get himself over like nobody ever in this business.
He and Triple H are like two of the smartest guys of all time in the business. They know what to do. You know.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't help anybody else, but whatever. They know how to play the game, I guess. No pun intended.
Yeah.
The one thing about the Warrior, like we were saying, the entrance just was so much more impressive than anything he did in the ring. I don't know how to put into words. I mean, if you never saw him, you just couldn't get the feeling or the buzz in the arena when he came out. He was a big deal.
Yeah, especially if you aren't like young, didn't see him when you were younger. If you're like an older, you know, an adult, and you're just like seeing the Warrior, you probably think, fuck is up with this guy? He sucks. You know? I think you got to have to be kind of appreciate him.
In a way, the Ultimate Warrior is responsible for this show taking place because the three of us wouldn't really know of each other if we weren't part of F4WWrestlingObserver.com because the Ultimate Warrior was in the first match Brian Alvarez remembers, and that had a big part in him getting into wrestling and leading up to everything. So, like I say, in a small kind of weird way, the Ultimate Warrior is responsible for this show taking place tonight.
I never thought of it that way, but you might be onto something there, Ed.
You know, as bad as he was, we're talking about he was great at playing the Ultimate Warrior, the character, and all that. He may be one of the worst wrestlers to get a major push I've ever seen. I'm talking in the ring. I'm not talking about, like, everything else. I'm talking, like, technically. I mean, because...
Like, pure work rate.
Yeah. I mean, he was awful, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I remember him hitting the ring, and, like, he'd do one of those things where, you know, he's hitting the ring, giving dudes clotheslines, and then he just starts ducking imaginary clotheslines. Nobody's throwing clotheslines, and he's ducking them. Like the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. But he could pull out some. He was in some amazing match. Like we talked about the WrestleMania match.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the first Macho Man match. Where Macho Man had Sherry. And Sherry deserves a lot of credit because she was awesome in that match. And she was looking smoking in that match also. But the first one was one of the best matches. At the time, I mean, it was awesome. It was just the Macho Man got – the Macho Man and Warrior had something because they had two awesome matches. We'll talk about the second one in a little bit, but the first one was just phenomenal.
Yeah, it was a retirement match, and one thing I didn't like about it, I think Randy Savage hit him with like five elbows off the top in a row and he still kicked out. I always found that kind of silly, you know.
Didn't he hit him like, I'm trying to think back, it's been such a long time since I've seen the match, but the Ultimate Warrior hit Savage a bunch of times was like kind of like where he thought he finished him off and he would kick out and the Warrior was like, looking up to the sky and talking to himself.
He thought it was his time to go. You know, he looked like he was leaving, if I remember correctly.
Oh, my gosh. He was such a character.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, he was such a character. You know, Dave and Brian were talking about putting a live mic in front of the guy, and I am wildly entertained by this idea. I mean,
I'll be there. I got my tickets Thursday morning.
He could take you on a trip with his promos that you would swear that you were watching Pink Floyd's The Wall. I mean, he was on another planet on some of the stuff. And talk about drinking the Kool-Aid. When I was a kid, when he would talk, I'd be on the edge of my seat, and I'd be like, all right, I don't know what we're doing, but let's go. You know what I mean? He was so far out in left field, but the passion in which he cut a promo, you have wordsmiths like Terry Funk and Cactus Jack and even Raven that would cut a monotone, almost there was a bravado in their voice where they would talk and you'd just hang on every word. And with the Warrior, you were just amped up and had no idea what he was saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my favorite part of the Ultimate Warrior DVD, I think, is when Christian is reenacting one of the Ultimate Warrior's promos, and they're kind of cutting between the two of them.
Right.
And Christian just cuts he just does it perfect. I mean, just like he has every word for word. It's like, how the hell does he? Like, not only did he understand what he was saying, he was able to memorize it word for word. I mean, how hard would that is?
That's just like a dick thing to do. I mean, you're gonna spend all this time and money putting this thing up so you can just tear a guy apart. And, I don't know. It was a good DVD. I ain't gonna say it wasn't. I thought the documentary was pretty damn good, but I mean, still, that's just a dick thing to do, I think.
Yeah,
there's never going to be another one like him.
Yeah, I think there's. I think part of the agreement was that there's going to be a new DVD coming out.
Yeah,
a totally different one. Which I don't blame him for that. But you know, besides Macho Man and Hogan, he also had great matches with Rick Rude. And
yeah, true.
You know, and. Yeah, that was a pretty good match.
And also with Kurt Hennig.
Yeah, he had some good matches with Kurt Hennig. Yeah, the end of that Survivor Series match was pretty awesome when it came down to him and Kurt.
Mm-hmm.
And who could forget the match with him and Honky Tonk Man where the Honky Tonk Man lost his title?
Yeah, that's still one of the best crowd reactions I've ever seen.
It's insane.
Yeah, because he ended the longest running Intercontinental title reign, if I'm not mistaken, still to this day. I could be mistaken, but
yeah,
that was also one of the times wasn't that one of the matches where Beefcake got screwed out of the title? Because I remember it happened twice. It happened with the Kerryvon Eric beat Mr. Perfect, and I think it was supposed to be him against the Honky Tonk Man instead of the Ultimate Warrior.
Him against Honky Tonk Man, but like a week before, Ron Bass was cutting some dude up with his spurs and whipping him with Miss Betsy, and you know, Beefcake hit the ring with his garden shears and cut Miss Betsy up. And then the next week, Bass jumped him after he won a squash match and cut him open with the spurs so he couldn't be in the match.
I remember seeing that when I was a kid, and I was really traumatized by that. He actually took the spur and ran it across the guy's forehead, and the guy comes up bleeding. It's like, well, that's a little violent.
They had the big X on the screen, too.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And the kill by that one was when he had the piss-having accident. So.
Excuse me?
Yeah, that's right.
That's when Beefcake had a piss-having accident
kill
by that replaced him.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah. Yeah, where he had
his face destroyed. He came back with the catcher's mitt over, or catcher's mask over his face.
Yeah.
Oh. I remember on Primetime Wrestling, Bobby Heenan was putting refrigerator magnets on his face.
That was the greatest thing that Big Kick ever did, was when he put the magnets on his.
Who does that? Man, he got reconstructive surgery, got this, I don't know, as he tells, he's got these fucking titanium plates that he's like built the space shuttle with or some stupid shit like that in his head. And Bobby Heenan is just sitting there putting refrigerator magnets on his face.
Amazing.
Man, this is demented. I mean, who does that?
Bobby Heenan.
Bobby Heenan runs out of shit to say, he just does something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
One of the things that stood out on the Ultimate Warrior that I remember the most, remember when Jake Roberts locked him in the pit with the snakes?
Oh, yeah. I think he got, like, bit on both sides of his face.
Yeah. Oh, he locked him in this room, and all of a sudden he turns light on, there's snakes everywhere. And I swear, in the back of the room, sitting there, I swear I saw the Ark of the Covenant. Right there in the corner, I swear I saw it.
It couldn't have been, because aren't you supposed to die if you see the Ark of the Covenant?
Or if you open it.
Oh, that's
then
right.
You milk or some shit. And that's good. My mom took me to see that movie.
To get off the subject, let's talk about Raiders of the Lost Ark. I saw that movie every week with my two buddies when we were kids, every week. I don't know how many weeks in a row. And every time they opened up that damn ark and that ghost came out and then the face turned ugly, I swear to God, I had to close my eyes and look away.
I was just a kid. My mom was always a big. She loved Harrison Ford, so he goes to see him and see whatever movie he's in, and took me to this movie. And I mean, it's a good, you know, as a kid, you know, you got the bullwhips and the snakes and, you know, all this action adventure, and then at the end, these people's faces melt off. I scared the shit out of me. Jesus.
I know. I just had the same thing here.
I can't decide which worse of the scene, that scene, or the scene in Temple of Doom when they eat dinner.
Yeah, that was no good.
That one wasn't. Yeah. Well, the thought of the monkey brain was pretty bad, but no, when the thing that came out of the ark killed everybody, that was fucked up.
They cut the snake open and all the worms and shit come out, or baby snakes or something?
Baby snakes.
Oh, yeah.
Holy Christ.
Yeah.
So did the Raiders of the Lost Ark scare you as a kid, Craig?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. My folks apparently couldn't find a sitter, and we went to see it. And are you kidding me? Yeah, I can't even remember how old it was. I just know for some reason I went with them, but my brother somehow wasn't there. So either they just locked him in a room, or which would explain a lot, actually. But anyway, yeah, that scared the snot out of me. I mean, the opening scene, you know, when he's running down the cave, you know, and the first thing that gets you is the
rolling ball.
Even before that, the spear thing flies in front of him. Like the fence with the spears on it, and then there's that half skeleton still hanging from it, you know. And then I had dreams at night of him being in the Well of the Lost Souls, and there was, you know, one of those mummified guys, and there's a big python like crawling out of the mouth of the Oh, you kidding me? Bad dreams.
When he got what he came for, and then he's running back out of the tomb, and the guy who tried to screw him and leave him there, he's got this flash.
Yeah.
He comes up and he's just sitting there because he wasn't able to avoid one of the traps.
Yeah, he was pinned to the wall. Yep, bad times.
Just a few weeks ago, the Peach Machine and his wife went on a trip to like Singapore and Cambodia and all those weird places, and they went somewhere where they had like a like a thing, just like the Raiders of the Lost Ark was like a kind of like a treasure thing right in the middle, and fucking Teach Machine fucking like reenacted the ceiling of the thing. It was like the stupidest thing I ever seen. But it made me laugh.
I wish I knew that he was going to Singapore. I'd get him to buy me a cane or something as a memento.
Oh, knowing him, he probably brought one. But let's go ahead and subway back to the Ultimate Warrior. And he became champion, and he wasn't as successful as Hogan, but let's be honest, who would be? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's nobody who could have been more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Especially because he was right next, you know? It's not even like he had a buffer, you know what I mean? So it wasn't as successful, but, I mean, I went to the shows when they would come here, and he was the headliner, and they still showed up, sold out to Freeman, and, you know, he had a decent run. He ended up losing it to Sergeant Slaughter, which kind of baffled me because at the time, you know, Sergeant was, like, washed up and hadn't been around for a while, and it's like, how the hell did he beat the Ultimate Warrior, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it did make sense considering all the stuff they were doing. You know, the war and everything. Him and Hogan in the main event at WrestleMania and all that stuff. But, yeah, when that was shocking when Slaughter beat him.
Didn't Macho Man hit him with, like, his scepter, and the scepter, like, fell apart before he actually hit him?
I think so.
In that match. Yeah.
Sounds right.
Macho Man was the best worker in that match.
Well, yeah.
Well, except for the scepter. The scepter kind of blew his spot.
But in business for itself.
But then, after that, he wasn't around Hold on 1 second. Go ahead and talk to me still. Are you asking me for 20?
No, what I was going to tell... What I was going to say to Ed, you know, you talked about all these great matches that, you know, he had with Macho Man and Rick Rude and Kurt Hennig. Why do you think he had good matches with those guys, Couture?
Because he wasn't that great of a worker at the time. He became a better worker when he was in WCW, but at that time he really wasn't at that time, I don't think.
Kurt Hennig was awesome all the time.
Not Kurt Hennig, I'm talking about Rick Rude.
Oh, okay. You said Kurt Hennig, didn't you?
Well, my mistake. I meant Rick Rude.
Okay, I'll give you that.
That was when Rick Rude was just developing into like a pretty good worker at the time. I mean, he was working with Warrior.
Which was actually, he got as good as he did working with the Warrior, which is weird. You know what I mean? Because
aside from Sergeant Slaughter, I think he's like one of the only people to pin him in his entire, you know, WWE career.
Is that right?
Yep. Andre beat him once in Italy. I saw Andre beat him on the tape. He got a pin only like three times.
But after that, he... Okay, what exactly happened? He was supposed to kind of, like, feud with maybe Sid, kind of after
that. Jake the Snake, you remember, because the kids they were doing, and Jake turned heel.
Mm-hmm. Now, was this before or after the whole Undertaker stuff?
This was after the Undertaker stuff. Undertaker stuff was like... Right after WrestleMania in 91, and this was in August, because you remember Jake the Snake, he was supposed to be teaching about the secrets of the darkness or something to beat the Undertaker,
right?
Something stupid like that, and
sure. And
so then Jake turned heel, and Jake kind of got hooked up with the Undertaker, and they were like partners or something like that, and then he got fired at the end of the SummerSlam, and that's when Sid came in to take his place.
Sid.
Snake jumped out of the box at the wedding reception.
Okay.
Well, real quick, did the Ultimate Warrior and the British Bulldog, did they get fired because they failed a drug test, or did they get fired just because he knew they were on steroids and they needed to get rid of the main steroid user.
Yeah, because he knows they were on steroids and knew he needed to get rid of them, probably. That's what I was thinking. Because that's when the heat from the feds were coming down, and they left, and that's really when Britt and, you know, Sean got their either shots up top. So.
Mm-hmm.
And how long was he gone for?
He left in August of 91. And remember, he came back, he helped Hogan. When Hogan faced it at that next WrestleMania, he came out and helped him at the end. You remember?
What mania was that? I'm sorry.
That was WrestleMania 8 in the Hoosier Dome.
Okay.
And then Hogan wrestled. You remember they playing it like it was Hogan's last match?
Okay.
And he beat Sid by disqualification, and then Papa Shango ran out, and then the Warrior came out.
Isn't that where Papa Shango missed his cue or something?
Yeah, and Sid ended up kicking out of the leg drop or something like that when he wasn't supposed to.
Oh,
I bet that was keeping the back after
that. Might be the worst WrestleMania main event of all time.
Yeah.
Possibly. I have to look back and see.
And then afterwards, Warrior worked with Papa Shango when that man threw up on the guy's head.
Threw up black.
And he had like black stuff coming from his head, like black tar was coming from his forehead.
I'll never forget the day I seen him vomit on that guy. That was, God, he showed that. I'd rather start blading again and see
right.
Something like that.
Oh.
And he came back in 90. He left it after he and the Bulldog were up. He came back in 96. So he beat Triple
H.
Was
that when he had the bodysuit where he had like kind of like the El Gigante bodysuit where he had his muscles, even though he was still he wasn't as jacked up, but he was still jacked up, but he still had a, they still made him wear a bodysuit with muscles carved all into him?
That was in 92. That was in 92.
Okay.
And it was flesh colored. I said, well, what's the point of even wearing that thing? I don't know.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. That was.
No, I was talking earlier. I said there's only one Ultimate Warrior, and I was going to bring up the WCW version that they tried to pull off of the Ultimate Warrior. And I honestly
and
don't know a lot about it.
And they tried to make you think he was the Ultimate Warrior when he was coming in, too.
Hogan said he got an ultimate surprise for you.
Right.
That's right.
And what show was that, Couture?
Uncensored 95.
Okay.
And then some second rate, you know, forgive me for saying that about someone who died, but basically a second rate Ultimate Warrior knockoff came out and squashed Arn Anderson. And it made me just shake my head like when Eric Watts beat up Arn Anderson.
I promptly vomited.
Yeah. Poor Arn Anderson, dude. He always had to put over these dudes.
And if it, this tells you something about the Renegade, I think he was a worse worker than the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, he wasn't very good. And he was also putting...
At least Warrior had the whole package, you know. You know, he had the character and everything down. This guy didn't have nothing.
Yeah, he didn't have the promos. He didn't even have Warrior's work rate, which is saying something. And he started off with a big push, but then he became basically like enhancement talent almost pretty much. And, you know, it ended up getting to the guy's head where he ended up he decided to kill himself. And kind of a sad story, and poor guy, it's not his fault they put him in that position.
Position, and you know they were giving him a good push, they were putting him over, and they kind of just dropped everything. He was losing a lot, and then he lost his job, and I don't know, it's too much too soon.
Some people just can't deal with that. You know, too
which
much
I don't
too
understand.
Soon.
I don't understand not being able to deal with stuff like that. Just move on and do something else, you know?
Yeah. Well, some people are just wired different, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a sad story. I mean, it really is a sad story.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's something we do have to talk about.
Although I thought his tag team with Joe Gomez was awesome.
Joe Gomez.
And they did those gay-ass videos where it's him and Joe Gomez and Alex Wright and Jimmy Powers walking on the beach with no shirts on because they're building up their being an eight-man tag. It was the weirdest thing.
You know, WCW did some gay-ass shit back then. I'm sorry. You had them. You had the American males. I mean, oh, my God. Come on now.
They did the kind of videos. They were doing those silly videos in WCW back when, if you did them in Memphis, they'd be okay. Does that make sense? You know, because Memphis was all about doing those goofy videos and doing, like, the really sexy rock and roll type tag teams. But you do it, like... Mm-hmm. Like on Monday Nitro, it's like, shit, this is gay, you know.
Did you guys listen to Jim Cornette on the Steve Austin podcast?
No, I never listened to it.
Oh, you've got to hear. He did two parts with Jim Cornette, and the second part, because I'm who I am, I can't even tell you the rib that Dennis Condrey pulled on this guy in Mid-South. And Jim Cornette dubbed it the double reverse rib about...
Do you know this rib picture? Do you want me to say it? Because I have no problem telling you about this rib.
I know you don't.
If you describe it a little, I'll probably tell you what it... I probably know what it was, but keep going.
Okay, it was Dennis Condrey and Phil Hickerson when they were a tag team, right? And this is when Tojo was, you know, one of the main players in Memphis. And Tojo is very homophobic, like very, very, very homophobic. So Andre told Hickerson, let's fuck with Tojo and let's make him think we're gay. So basically, Condrey was standing there and he had his kind of pants down. And Hickerson was in front of him on his knees. And basically, it was just so Tojo would walk by and he would see where it looked like Phil was about to go down on Condrey. Well, when Tojo did walk by, Condrey grabbed Hickerson by the back of the head and pushed him forward and shoved his dick in his mouth. So poor Phil Hickerson got ribbed on a rib.
The double reverse rib.
Oh, that's fucked up. I would have kicked his ass.
Yeah.
I would have killed him. Shit. I would have killed him, and I would have killed anyone else even close to the room that might have even been a witness.
The funniest thing was Cornette was telling the story, and Cornette goes, Dennis said his tongue felt like sandpaper. Oh, my God.
That's funny.
Yes and no. You've rendered Couture speechless.
I'm sorry, I wouldn't listen. Would y'all say? I'm kidding. I was just taking it all in.
Yeah, literally.
I was letting you guys have your moment.
Thank you.
Before I take over.
Anyway, the Steve Austin podcast with Jim Cornette just had me in stitches. So, anyway.
And Woody's also outside, you know, like just had outside the wrestling for the company. He said some pretty cool out of the ring moments. I mean, everybody knows the whole queer next to world. I watched that tape. I watched that video. I didn't know fuck all about what they were talking about. It was some politics bullshit. People try to talk politics. I just go somewhere else. I go in another room. I don't want to listen to shit like that. Because I don't understand it, so I'm not going to have any input, so it don't matter. He was at some convention. I think it was like a sports convention, and actually he tried to go up there and say hello to him, and apparently she said a bunch of shit about him. And the one thing that told him more, he was if you say something about him, he's going to remember it. He's like an elephant; he never forgets shit. And even like the smallest thing you say about him, he's going to go off on you and hold a grudge against you. He actually told him to fuck off. And the chief manager's trying to get him out of there. And she gets so mad, he slaps the manager across the face. Have you never seen that case? Alexa?
No.
It's awesome. He just smacks his manager right across, just slaps him as hard. It's like an abusive husband who slaps his woman, you know. Hey, Jesus. Another one, where's that? And just, man, go on. Got nothing to say to him. And then there was another one where he was in this, this big line to get his autograph. And I'll say this about the Ultimate Warrior, with all the bad things people say about him. And I guess and I never really had a problem with much stuff, much that he did. He's just kind of weird to me, which, you know, I don't dislike the guy or nothing, but he really cares about his fans, you know. He's got,
right.
I mean, still to this day, I mean, he's got fans like rabid fans that just love the guy and, like, follow him on his website and stuff like that. And so doing this autograph signing, and this young man is standing there, he's waiting to get his autograph, he's meeting him, and all of a sudden this guy, he's like a manager for like a, I think it was some kind of, an NFL football player, I think it was at a sports show, and this football player was there, and he just kind of tells him who he is and who he's here with, and can we break in line, and where he goes off on him, tells him, no, he was here. People like you, it's what makes society the way it is, all perverted and silly shit. And said, no, you can't cut in line. These people are here for you. I don't care who you are. You go stand over there and wait your turn. That's it. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a trip. I mean, he's very self-opinionated and I just remembered because I'm kind of looking to the side where I have all my little comic books bagged up, and I actually have a copy of the Ultimate Warrior comic book. Do you guys remember when that came out?
Image Comics.
It's in the style of Image Comics, so it might be, but it might predate Image.
Pretty sure it was Image, but did it came out about
the
time?
Well, it had that, and you know how the Image, they all kind of have the same look. That's exactly how
yeah.
the cover looks. Yeah. So
it came out about the same time as the Undertaker and the Mick Foley comic book about then.
I don't remember the Mick Foley comic book.
There's like the main fan comic book.
Yeah. Because I used to collect comic books myself. So I probably have that somewhere around here.
What's your prime position
sure.
in your comic book collection, Greg?
Oh, goodness. I've got Spawn 1 through 100.
I got Spawn 1.
I've got, it's been so long since I've dug them out. I don't know. But Todd McFarlane, the creator of Spawn, his brother-in-law by marriage actually had a comic book shop just 10 minutes away from the house, and Todd was down here, like, all the time. And I actually got him to sign my Amazing Spider-Man number 1 because he did the cover. That's kind of cool, probably. Something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway.
Cool. So, my prize position is I have a copy from, I don't know, it's from the 70s, but it's a giant size X-Men number 1, the first appearance of, like, Storm, Colossus, Nightcrawler. And it's where they formed that team of the X-Men. And that's my prize position.
I think the oldest one I have is actually a G.I. Joe comic book, and it was the first time that, is it Zartan? Is that the guy?
Zartan.
It's the first episode that he ever showed up.
The guy who could, like, take other people's appearances.
Right. So that's probably the oldest thing I have.
The oldest thing that I have is an Avengers annual, The Death of Adam Warlock. which I don't have the second part of it where he came back from the dead and or came back out of the soul gym and turned Tonus into stone. I would love to get that one, but yeah, that's the oldest one I have. That's an awesome issue. For some reason, I was a big fan of Adam Warlock.
I've got the I have the comic adaptation of Star Wars.
Mm.
I got back in 1974 when it came out.
I remember
that.
I had one or two issues.
I love those when those movies will come out and they come out with the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the movie and the comic book. I thought that stuff was awesome.
Yeah. Now you guys have to have the death of Superman in the black bag with the red writing on the front, the red S in blood, and then not more than 2 months later, the white bag comic came back out where Superman was reborn.
I don't think I have the one you said, but I have like the paperback of the death of Superman. I have all the first issues of the new Superman, because there was like four of them. It was like
mm-hmm.
Steel. There was like a cyborg Superman.
Yeah.
And there was like, wasn't it like super, what the hell was it? It was like three or four of them. But yeah, I have all those.
Yeah, I remember I heard that they were, some of their comics were doing something, and Superman, they were killing off Superman. I said, well, this has kind of big. Maybe I ought to check it out. And I went and bought the issue of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's probably like, okay. Those are like probably the only real DC comics I have, because I've always been more of a Marvel fan than a DC fan.
Yeah. I always went with the more obscure independent comics. I liked a lot of the Image stuff that came out.
The thing about Image is it would start off great, and then it would just end. You know what I mean? Out of nowhere. It's just, I don't know. It was just Image was a great idea, but it was a failure of a company.
Well, it's still going. What do you mean failure? In the beginning,
they get you excited for, like, there's some Indian superhero, the Native American superhero that they propped up, and then they had, like, one episode. I don't even know when the second one came out.
Right.
You know?
They were, I remember, like, the Witchblade series was really amazing, and then they had, like, their own Fantastic Four, the Youngbloods, I think it was called. But other than
I think
that,
Youngbloods and the Wildcats. Weren't there like Wildcats or something?
Yeah, Wildcats. That was the other one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
it was
I always used to get the Archie Digest. Remember that?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Granny.
But Archie and Jughead, I love that shit.
Did you ever get in, like, the other comics that I was into? I was into this really twisted comic called Dawn. It was made by Joseph Michael Linzer. He's one of my favorite. I mean, this guy, he would paint all the panels for his comics, and he's just a tremendous writer. It's really a twisted comic book, definitely not for kids. I think you'd have to be 17 to buy it when I was...
You know, like Walking Dead type stuff?
No. It talks about a lot about religion and death and life and angels, and it's really twisted stuff. It's some of my favorite stuff. He's probably one of my favorite writers. He's just phenomenal.
I like the Crow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that movie with Brandon Lee was fucking awesome that they made.
Yeah, too soon. Gone too soon. You know, he's buried up here in Seattle next to his daddy.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's interesting.
That's actually one of my favorite movies of all time, I guess, before to say. I really love that movie.
Yeah, well,
one of the best soundtracks of all time, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
But,
So that was a weird segue into the rest of the news, but I
remember Warrior University?
No.
Yeah, I remember the Warrior University. That was funny as shit.
I think they lasted a semester.
There you go.
This was not Lance Storm. He did not go ultimate. I mean, multiple semesters.
Okay. So permission to get into the rest of the news of the week.
And I know y'all are excited for his speech. I know y'all are sitting on the edge of y'all's seat. But it is going to be pretty awesome. And it's sad I'm not going to be there because that may be the only place it airs. So that you get to hear the whole thing. So put up a good report on it because I want to know everything.
Yeah, I'll
see. Okay. Can I get into the rest of the news of the week? Because we got
one. And Alan, I'm hoping, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm hoping for the next day at WrestleMania for him to come out and squash 3MB.
That would be fucking awesome.
Do it like they did Hogan back in 05 when he was inducted. You know, he came out the next night to help Eugene against Muhammad Hassan, and the plays went fucking ballistic. Nobody remembers that, just me.
No, I remember that. It was okay.
I don't remember.
Okay.
God.
All right, Craig. Go ahead and try it one more time before I interrupt you again.
Okay. So I got news here.
Okay.
Yeah, got some news here.
I didn't go into detail. There's not many details on my show, so.
Yeah, I noticed that. I'm also going to leave out your smart aleck.
I was trying to be funny at like 3 o'clock this morning when I was doing it.
Yeah, I was thinking either you were trying to be cute or drunk. So I figured maybe
I
a little
tired,
bit.
I just get tired of having to search out all these details on the fucking computer. I just said, I'm just going to get to the point.
Sure. And you got a good chuckle out of me on some of the things.
Okay.
Big news of the week.
Then the whole thing was worth it.
Absolutely.
If I got a chuckle out of you.
Okay. Big news, of course, this week was that Mae Young passed away at possibly the age of 90. We're still kind of unclear as to how old she actually was, but... Yes, she finally did pass away. She was in bad shape for about a week. And rumors all this week that, that she had passed away. And then, unfortunately, she did pass away this Wednesday night, right?
I believe so. Tuesday. Because I remember they were just finding out about it when they were doing the Brian Vinny show on Tuesday. So
that's right.
It was very confusing because there was like multiple newspapers had posted that she died, and there was like confusion in the house. Everyone there is like extremely old, and it was just a big clusterfuck because even I knew she was still kind of alive, but I was honestly everything I read, I didn't think she was going to last a few hours. So I posted in our RIP, about it because I didn't think she was going to last that long. And she ended up lasting like almost a whole week. And,
I still think we should have gotten our Mae Young obituary this week. You know, Dave had to, last week when he heard that she died, he had to start writing and he probably finished it. I don't know why he didn't post it this week. He had plenty of time.
Yeah, WWE got on those videos real fast, and I'm sure, unfortunately, they probably had them in the can for a while.
I didn't believe when I believed she was dead is when I saw that Vince McMahon commented on it.
He's not one that's going to go out on record and jump the gun.
You know what I mean?
I think Stephanie was the first one that reported it.
And Vince McMahon don't comment on much, so.
True.
<Yeah. laughs>
Very true.
But,
yeah,
if anybody wants to kind of, learn a little bit about Mae Young, I did the other day, I strongly suggest you watch Lipstick and Dynamite. She is absolutely awesome in that video, in that movie. And what I really came away from Mae Young is if you watch the movie, there's about 6 of them, and basically 4 of them hate Moolah, like they really hate Moolah.
Yeah.
But they really show the respect to Mae Young. You know what I mean? And considering that Mae Young and Moolah were pretty much, you know, a team for decades, you know, that says a lot that they would have that much respect for someone who was pretty much partners with someone that they hated. So
yeah.
That's just the kind of respect she had in the business. I mean, like Penny Banner tells the story that the first time she met Mae Young was dressed like a man, which supposedly women weren't supposed to do back in the day, smoking a cigar, and said, "What's up, fuckface?" you know, she was just, she was hell on wheels. I mean, she was like, they said she was like the shooter or the, you know, one of the policemen of the women. And, she was just, you know, a badass. And she was actually very, very attractive in her when she first came into the business. She came in at like 15, 17 years old, and she was actually very attractive. And, I listened to some stuff from Jim Ross and Jerry Briscoe. And they talked about where Jim Ross said she was actually on the boys' football team, but they ended up kicking her off because she was a girl and girls weren't supposed to be on the football team, and that she was also on the wrestling team and she would beat the shit out of all the guys. And supposedly the way she really got into the business is they had kind of trained her a little bit, I guess, and I guess it would be more of a shooting style than just like, you know, pro wrestling thing. So she went to one of the shows where it was Mildred Burke against Gladys Killam Gillum, and she challenged Mildred Burke. Now, whenever someone would challenge Mildred Burke like that, Billy Wolf, who was the promoter and Mildred Burke's husband, he would put one of the shooters against that person. You know, they had to beat this person to get to Mildred Burke. Like, it would always either be like Mae Young or Ellie Waldeck. You know, they pretty much protected Mildred Burke, and it was Mildred Burke against Gladys Killam Gillum. And Billy Wolf said, okay, you know, you got to beat Gladys Killam Gillum. And basically she killed her in a minute. I mean, just basically beat the fuck out of her because I don't think she was wise up to the business at that point. And she just killed Gladys Killam Gillum in a minute, you know, and that pretty much started her career.
The stuff I remember with her was just, you know, the backstage stuff and, you know, everybody, hey, let's give May a hand
You know, there are some, you know, when that video, when that tribute video,
I almost said it's here when they showed the scene and that tribute video where they showed her and Mark Henry dancing and Mark Henry's like so happy. Because people say that stuff was so bad. I love those skits. That stuff was awesome, you know. Sexual Chocolate and Mae Young.
What else are they supposed to show of her? You know?
That's true.
I mean, I didn't see. I don't think I've ever seen like a real Mae Young match. I mean, WWE stuff. I don't even really consider that wrestling. Her having a match. I mean, you know, back when she was like in her prime and still wrestling and stuff. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
Well, it was so far back. You know, there's probably very little of like her stuff available. You know,
like some people had a problem with a lot of the stuff they were showing in that tribute video. Well, there's not much they can. That's not all they can show of her, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean that's true. That's true. Because I mean, you know that's what people know her from today is from the WWE. You know, and
true.
But she was part of the comedy aspect of the show. You know, her and being the horny old lady. You know, messing around with Mark Henry and then giving birth to the hand, which at the time was like one of those what the hell kind of moments. But then some 20 years later when they paid it off, that was fucking awesome.
20 years later they paid it off. I couldn't believe that.
Now the hand is in order.
Tell me you guys didn't mark out and when that hand, when they opened the door and there's Mae Young with a hand.
That's just so stupid. I'll tell you, you can get mad about it. Like some people do. Killing businesses. You're killing the wrestling business. God damn it.
And I love the part where they're showing the part of the anger management skits where Kane and Brian are going crazy, like when Harry met Sally at the diner, and then they show Mae Young. I'll have exactly what they're having.
Well, she did the same thing during the movie skit with Kurt Angle and Christy Hemme. If you remember?
That's right.
I remember. This is something I remember. because we're talking about Mae Young, something about Moolah. She had the she actually won the women's title from Ivory at like one pay per view or something. I think in like 1999. I've never seen anybody do this, and it tickled me to death when I seen it. She wants to go up the ropes, and she looks at the, she goes to the bottom rope and stands on it to do a high spot. This is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Me and my friends were sitting there, we were rolling. She went to the bottom rope to do a high spot.
Yeah. Well, speaking of high spots, you know, who can ever forget the visual? And it's on that video of fucking Bubba Ray Dudley fucking power bombing as, what was she, 79 at the time, a 79-year-old lady, off the through a fucking table. I mean.
Yeah.
And then,
you know,
and
of everything.
In the back, when they went to the back, she went and formed the shit out of Bubba because he protected her too much.
Jeez, guys, some dudes killed. I remember the 3-minute warning. They fucking destroyed her. I mean,
yeah,
you know how lucky this company is. They didn't kill that woman.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
and maybe looking back, maybe this did like. I would never, I'd never want to say that something that happened to her like that caused it, but I mean, and I wouldn't blame it on anybody. It's just one of those things. But they're so lucky they didn't kill that woman. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
She lasted a decade after that, so I don't think any of that had anything to do with her dying.
Yeah, but I know what I'm just saying. But you could. They did so much shit to the woman. I mean, I don't know how they didn't kill her in the ring. They were lucky. They could have had a PR nightmare on their hands if they'd have killed this old woman in the ring.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. But you know what? You know what? I'm sure she wouldn't. That's the way she'd want to go. It would have caused a lot of trouble.
You know, and everything. The scariest thing I've ever seen happen to her in the ring was when she fell back and her neck hit the bottom rope.
Oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
And it looked like she fell back. Her neck. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that's when they kind of realized that they couldn't really let her do too much. But one of my favorite stories, too, is also like when they had the match with Bob and Crash Holly, and Holly's letting them like kind of lay out the match, and they say, okay, yeah, we'll clothesline me. And he's like, well, if I'm going to clothesline you, I can't make it look bad. I have to do it for real. And she's like, yeah, that's fine. And he kind of kept like trying to give her the hint that, hey, you don't want the clothesline. And basically she's like, bring it, motherfucker. And he brought it, and she took it like a champ. So, yeah, I mean, that really, this is that, her death made me sadder than a lot of the, I guess I've become desensitized in a lot of ways to a lot of the deaths. I mean, some of them affect me a lot, but this is the one that's affected me a lot, and since probably since Eddie died, I guess.
Yeah, I don't want to, and it hurts, like, you know, some people tell me, it's such a tragedy she died. She lives to be 90, and this isn't like a tragedy,
yeah.
This just, Just nature taking its course. And that was
she got old.
Yeah. I mean, she had a long, happy life. I mean, you go back to her last appearance on Raw, which wasn't really that long ago. It was on her birthday. And you see that video. They didn't show it on Raw, but the video with her and Vince and Hunter, I mean, that woman was very happy at the end of her life. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's not a tragedy. She led a great, great life. I mean, she did a lot of things. She wrestled basically almost 9 decades.
This is not an art falling out of the ceiling. This is not a tragedy. Yeah.
No, it's something to be celebrated.
I haven't seen SmackDown yet, and of course I'm sure they're going to have something real nice for Raw. But TNA actually did a really cool job with the way they, you know, hey, thanks, May.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Bubba, it was really subtle. Bubba wore the wristbands that had May's name on it. And then before the show really got going, Taz, in a nutshell, said, you know, there's never been a tougher, meaner broad inside the squared circle. And then talked about how this sweet and kind lady that he got to know, it was really nice the way Taz talked about her, and anyway, I thought that was really cool.
I can't remember the last time I heard so many people commenting on a diss. Maybe it's Savage. I mean, it shows you the effects you had on people, you know, seeing all these comments and people talking about it everywhere. So it's a big deal.
Yeah,
I mean, she really made an impression on me. I mean, I have nothing but the utmost respect for her. Like I put on my post, I think she's the toughest goddamn woman who ever lived.
Hey, she brought me about 75% of the laughs in my life, so that's saying something when somebody has that effect on
me. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay, moving along. Let's quit talking about death. Let's talk about the renewing of life together. In a ceremony in Hawaii, Jimmy Uso and Naomi were married just yesterday. Ah, isn't that sweet?
Yeah, so next season of Total Divas.
Yeah. And film for Total Divas.
I will agree, like I don't agree with Brian about a lot of things, but yes, she is the black Jessica Rabbit.
You know, I wonder if the girl can snorkel while she's in Hawaii, because I think her butt would basically be a buoy. You know?
Well, that would help with the snorkeling, because you're not going deep when you snorkel.
Well, I'm just saying, you can't get down there because, you know, the backside is keeping
you afloat. Scuba diving. Snorkeling, you're at the top because you have to breathe through your snorkel.
Oh, thank you for crapping on my joke. Anyway, Paul Heyman.
which one is Trinity? She's like the one that's really good in the ring.
Yes.
Yeah, the darker skin one.
Awesome.
You probably like less because she's darker.
And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be racist. I can't tell the two apart. Sue me.
Okay.
No.
All right. Anyway, moving along. Paul Heyman has a DVD coming out later this year. I think that's crazy. Paul Heyman gets his own DVD.
I hope they have a lot of his early stuff. What do you mean, how does he have his own
DVD? I mean, he's been a manager and, you know, promoter and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll put on that.
It'd be interesting to see people's opinions of him this late in the game.
I think most of it would be good. I mean, Paul Heyman's somebody who just is such a great performer. You know what? One of the best things I ever seen, and very few people have seen this, is, okay, I mean, most people have seen Beyond the Mat, and they've seen that little clip where he's firing up the guys backstage, and they show just a little clip. Okay, there's a special VHS, special gold edition of Beyond the Mat where they have like about half an hour of extra footage that didn't make the final cut. They have that entire speech. And if you hear this fucking speech, Craig, you would jump up and say, put me through a flaming table full of thumbtacks right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I've seen it. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean,
No, you go ahead.
Okay. He's just awesome. I mean, he's just... He did so much little things, like stuff with Missy or little things in WCW that were just awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, that were just so damn entertaining and funny, you know.
I hope they put they should put when they busted open Cornette when they invaded the studio, they should put that on there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
They should do the six-man loser league with the original Midnight Express and Paul E. against Cornette and his Midnight Express.
Absolutely.
I don't think we are. They should put the ECW funeral that Eric Bischoff did on Raw, which was fucking awesome. Do you remember that?
Barely, honestly.
Yeah, vaguely.
Because you know, something they were about to do with the One Night Stand, and Eric Bischoff was, you know, they were doing the storyline, and he did an ECW funeral on Raw, and. Then you had, like, Paul Heyman, Eric Bischoff, and Vince McMahon all in the same ring at the same time. I said, holy shit, this is weird.
I remember the shoot he did on Vince building up to the invasion.
That was, like, on SmackDown the week before the Survivor Series when they ended the whole Alliance thing. Yeah. And, I mean, he really shot. He was yelling at him about the fucking XFL, how much that sucked and all that stuff. I mean,
yeah. One of the greatest promos ever. Just plain and simple.
The stuff that they did with WWE and ECW, like him having the debate with Lawler, the podiums, now that stuff is really good. And even Lawler coming over to ECW to work in the cage match with Tommy Dreamer and stuff like that. There's a lot of
Tommy's
stuff they can do.
Oh, God.
That's right.
I remember it pained me when he described how he had to go to the hospital and they had to stick a needle in his testicle.
Yes, he drained the fluid out.
No, when Lawler showed up in the ring, that was fucking awesome. He said this ought to be wallpapered and toilet paper because there's nothing in it but shit in that arena. And he and Lawler legit did not like each other. Lawler believed it on purpose when he was in Memphis. But he didn't like the guy.
Yeah, and then, you know, him and Cornette don't like... You know, have you guys heard the story of why him and Cornette don't like each other?
I think because they're too much alike. Makes sense to me.
That, and also, I shouldn't even say this, but there are rumors that they were very close. And that's all I'll say.
I don't believe shit like that.
Okay.
But like I say, those are rumors. They're out there. I've heard of them.
The first time I ever heard that rumor, which means it's probably not true. Because I ain't heard it.
First time I've heard it as well. Well, we don't have much time left, so let me get into these other things. The American Wolves have signed with TNA. They made their quote-unquote debut last night on TNA television. And also looks like they're...
Actually, I don't think they made their debut last night, did they? I can't remember if they did last night.
They came out, they didn't have a match.
They didn't come out, there was a backstage skit in which Dixie said, oh, great, you guys are here for your tryout match next week. No, we have contracts, and they're signed by, and they handed Dixie the contracts. Dixie looks at them and says, new ownership? What? Or
investor
player or whatever. Investor, thank you. So it looks like they're going to be the first part of this new investor that's coming in, whoever that might be.
I don't know if anybody's noticed it or not, but I don't know if anybody's noticed it or not, but that show is fucking horrible.
Yeah, it's no good right now.
Holy shit.
I didn't see the show. I didn't see the show, but I saw a picture of the three of them, and if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Dixie towering over Davey?
Well, she is about a foot taller than he is. So, yes.
It's like Slickly managed. He just towers over the guy.
Yeah. I'm glad that the Wolves got signed by TNA, but I'm disappointed they didn't make it to WWE. You know, I mean, I think they would have got over. I mean, say what you will about Davey. I mean, he is a very intense performer and can get people into his matches, and Eddie Edwards is just all around badass, perfect. You know what I mean? I would have liked to have seen him in WWE, but they'll probably get more of a push in TNA.
Yeah, I saw one match that they had in NXT a couple weeks ago, and it was fine. Davey used Dynamite Kid's last name, his legit last name, as his character in NXT, which totally escapes me right now. But Billington, thank you. And, I mean, they were really good. They looked good. They looked great. Got some...
You know, what really sucked about that whole situation is they lost their chance to be in WWE because one of Hunter's guys fucked up in the match.
I didn't even see it. I didn't even see the quote-unquote screw-up. I thought the match looked fine.
That's what's really screwed up about it. I mean, it was a very unnoticeable, really, like, too much of a screw-up, but his guy did screw up and drop Davey on his head, and
that
basically ended up costing their thing. It's like, why is it the Wolves' fault? They're not the ones that fucked up. It was your guy. Why don't you fire the Ascension, not them?
Yeah, I did see that. He did almost kill the man. Okay, we got 5 minutes left. Do we talk about Sting or do we talk about Jesse Sorensen?
Well, let me talk about Sting real quick. And I'm not sure
I think he actually has left TNA.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're doing the Dave said in the Observer this week that he and WWE were talking again, and they're doing an angle next week where Magnus beats him, and so he has to leave. So
right.
I'm thinking he is, I'm thinking that he's gonna. If he is gone, if I was WWE, I'd try to sign him up to induct Warrior into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, have him induct Warrior, and the next year you induct Sting.
Now, do you put him in a Mania match and have him go against Taker?
No.
Okay.
No, not this year. They got too many. Okay. They got enough people this year with Batista back. Brock's still going to be probably going to be against Undertaker. You know, you got all this other. You got Punk and Hunter and John Cena. You don't need him this year.
I would bring him in for the Hall of Fame. Actually, I would basically bring him in for the Hall of Fame, then take him off TV, and then maybe bring him back, maybe SummerSlam or something, and then just build to like to something at Mania. You know what I mean? Don't have him wrestle. Maybe do an angle or two, but don't have him wrestle. You know, until Mania, just kind of build him up. You know what I mean? And I think that would work out pretty good.
Well, I was gonna say they could do it at like one of the SummerSlam or those pay-per-views to pop the buy rates, because I don't think there's going to be any buy rates anymore. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah,
throw out the plugs, brother.
All right, everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download the Stream Our Show at AngryMarks.com along with a lot of other shows. So check out AngryMarks.com. You can also download the Stream Our Show at BlockTalkRadio.com/Catrere and older shows at BlockTalkRadio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo, and you can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio. You can also check out my F4W, WrestlingAsEver.com, WrestleMania 30 meetup and info page on Facebook. And if you're going to WrestleMania, it has all the information of all the shows and all the things we are doing. And as of right now, our first event, our dinner Friday night, is officially sold out. And I want to thank NED for that, and go ahead, Craig.
First off, you can email the show at any time if you have questions or comments or ideas. You can email us at overthetopradio@gmail.com. That's overthetopradio@gmail.com. You can also hit me up on the Twitter machine. I am at proper, my last name, P-R-O-P-E-R-J-A-M, proper jam. And that's where I do all my wrestling and music-related stuff. So follow me there.
I'm on Twitter at Couture35. Go to youtube.com/Couture. Got a ton of old wrestling, classic wrestling videos up there. This week I put up a special holiday edition of Primetime Wrestling from, like, 1986.
Pretty cool.
If you enjoy Bobby Heenan and Grandma Soon jibber jabbering back and forth for an hour or so. It's always fun. So I'm also on Facebook, but please leave me alone.
Yeah.
I did mention the WrestleMania Facebook page. I do have to say a few things because I'm going to pitch about Brian Alvarez.
Sure.
Basically, Rodney, our good friend Rodney, that jerk, but our good friend Rodney, is pretty much doing all the work setting up the dinners and the brunch. And Rodney is a very technical person. He needs to have things done by the book. That's just how he's wired. And, you know, it's the smart thing to do. He's a very smart person. And we basically had to get a head count for the brunch by Monday to kind of start setting things up. So even though it's 3 months away, we sent some stuff for Brian. Now, we sent him some stuff for one show, and either he didn't get it or he just forgot to talk about it. And then I was able to get him to put the stuff in the update, which was cool. And then that day, we tried to get him again because, like I say, we needed a head count by a certain time, and we wanted him to read it out on the show. And basically, he didn't bother reading it. He just directed everybody to the update page and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Rodney's worrying because, you know, like I say, Rodney, he wants to do this thing by the book and everything. So basically, I had to get Vinny to go out and read all the information. And thankfully, Vinny did do this because we went from, in half a day before the show, we had 18 people signed up for the, actually not for the brunch, but for the Mania dinner on Friday because we had a limit of 50. We went from 50, and then they did the show, and half a day later, we went from 18, they did the show, and now we are sold out. So this is why we kind of pushed Brian to plug the stuff on the shows, which Brian feels that, oh, I put it on the update, that's enough. Well, if that's enough, why do you plug your fucking Twitter 6 times on every fucking show? I mean, it's on the front page. Isn't that enough? I mean, you know what I mean? He's so fucking, he's, you know, like I've said before, we're doing this for him, his website, and he fucking makes the most littlest effort to help us out. You know what I mean? It's like, God damn, I just want to kick the dude's ass sometimes. But thankfully, Vinny helped us out and read the thing. So, you know, good on Vinny. And, you know, so that's the Friday dinner is set up. But if you would still like to go to the Friday dinner, just call them and set up your own reservation. I'm sure they can help you out. They just gave us a limit of 50 for one party. And if you still want to go to the brunch, go to the Facebook page, get Rodney's email, let him know. You can go to the brunch. Brunch is going to be incredible. I don't think I saw your name on that list, Craig.
No.
It'll be awesome. I do want to remind you because there's only a few people who haven't paid for the WrestleMania tickets, and I know you asked for no time, which is fine. But yeah, try and take care of that as soon as you can. And then of course the other person, you'll never get to the other person who hasn't paid is. And I'm sure when I go to remind him, he's going to get all pissed off at me. But, you know, hopefully he'll take care of that pretty soon.
Yeah, I know.
Is it Dave Meltzer that hasn't paid yet? Oh, he don't go to me. Never mind.
No, it's the midget. But WrestleMania is going to be so badass. I can't wait. We still got like fucking 3 months to go almost. And we have front row tickets for ROH Friday night. You guys got general admission for Saturday. I got front row tickets to Shimmer. So Dave Prazak, I expect to have either Mia Yam or Shoelater Melissa or Leva Bates strolling in my lap during the show, and I would very much appreciate that. And also, you need to sign Minami Toyota and bring her in, and that would make me very happy. And that would be an awesome $200 spent.
Did you see the main event for the indie show that's going to be happening on the Saturday night before?
Are you talking about Hiro and Tanaka?
It's Kevin Steen and Masato Tanaka.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Kevin Steen and Tanaka,
yeah.
And the Young Bucks pulled out of both shows. They were going to do. Steen and the Young Bucks were supposed to do. They were supposed to do both shows. They were supposed to do Dragon's Gate and WrestleCon. And they pulled out of both shows. So the Young Bucks, you know, wonder they're not very popular. And Ted DiBiase pulled out of the Mid-South one because he's now going to do stuff with WWE. And, you know, it's gonna be an awesome weekend. I mean, you know, the whole thing is going to be awesome. Got Warrior. You know, I'm very excited for the Shimmer show. ROH is always awesome, and it's you know, they're going to stack that first night up because it's a super card of honor. You know, hopefully they'll bring some guys in because their roster is a little thin, but I'm sure it's always one of the best shows. We're working on one of the guys, Peppermint Fatty. He's working on setting up a ghost tour Sunday after brunch, which should be pretty cool because supposedly there's a lot of haunted shit in New Orleans. And then, you know, I was able to get a group of 20 and, you know, a lot of cool people going in that group. So that'll be awesome. Plus, besides all the wrestling stuff, there's fucking the French Quarter and Bourbon Street and Hurricanes and Cajun food and shrimp and crawfish and gumbo. And
I don't think Hurricanes are good.
I didn't mean those Hurricanes. I meant a Hurricane to drink.
No, I'm actually surprised they still have those kind of drinks down there called Hurricanes, just because of
that's where they got it. So they kind of, yeah. No, I got you on that one, but yeah, get the that have hurricane drinks, and then all the food.
Yeah.
I mean, it's my stomach might implode before I leave that weekend because I plan on eating a lot. Just looking at that menu for Friday's dinner at I don't even know how to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I plan on spending about $50 just on me.
Oddly enough, the last time I ever drank, or one of the last times I ever drank, I mean, heavily, I got drunk on hurricanes at a billiards club here, and I remember the guys were teasing me the next day because I went up and ordered a Hurricane Rana. True story.
You know, Jim Ross is doing his show that weekend in New Orleans.
But sadly it's on Thursday, and I'm not getting there till Friday. I would have considered it if had I known beforehand, but I'm already booked, and airplane tickets have gone up since then, so it's not feasible or easy. And then plus, I'd have to get someone else to do the paperwork for an extra day, so that's even so complicated. So that's the only thing I'm disappointed that I'm going to miss is Jim Ross, but I'm sure everything else will be awesome.
You're going to make Rodney drive you everywhere since he knows every place?
Awesome.
I'm not saying that because he's black. I'm saying that because he lives around there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's going to be a few people who are going to have cars. So I think that situation will be pretty cool. And then everything supposedly is either walking distance or just a streetcar ride away. So,
we'll see.
It should be an all-around good time.
I wouldn't walk down Bourbon Street right after you eat. I wouldn't walk down Bourbon Street because of the smell you may vomit. So,
oh, okay. That's good to know. Before we go, do you want to talk about the Jesse Swanson news? I don't even know what it is.
The what?
Didn't you say you had some news on Jesse Swanson or something?
Oh, no, that was just an extra thing in case we needed something to talk about.
Yeah, we're good. Yeah,
it was just an interview he did.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
I deleted the email, so it's no big deal.
I don't know, Craig, tell me about you found a Death Star or something.
A few weeks ago, we had talked about toys we had when we were a kid. I think we did it kind of on the Christmas show. But I had this Death Star toy when I was a kid, Anyway, long story short, the week after I, tell you guys about it, one comes up for sale on eBay, and it's, still in the box.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's been sent away and been graded for, I don't know what they do to grade them, but the thing is,
I can grade it in a box.
Great question, and I can't tell you. But, anyway, this Death Star is, it's a children's toy, obviously, but it brought me back to my youth. And I have one, but it's not complete. I have one in my dad's garage. Well, here's the follow-up to that story. I send the link to my dad, and my dad's, geeking out, saying, do you think we should buy the thing as an investment? You know, I'll buy it, and you sit on it. And I'm like, yeah, definitely. So the bidding is up to $408 right now as we speak, and it ends tomorrow. So I will let
Please
you know.
Please don't buy that.
Oh, it's not me. It's my father.
Oh, God.
1979 Kenner Toys Death Star, and it's absolutely amazing. And when I get it, if I
get
away,
look at the box.
No. It's in a glass. It's in a big plastic case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very cool. So I will, of course, post all kinds of pictures of it once I have it in my hot little hands. If in fact my dad wants to drop probably $5 or $6 on it.
Oh gosh.
Well, hey, when you get old and you can afford to do stuff like that, I just hope I can. That's all I'm saying.
Hell, man. I think it hit up $1,000 when you get old.
Maybe. I don't know. It's really flipping cool, though. Okay. I think we're done.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go back to watching Lost on Netflix. Now they're going back to the island, so I got to see what happens.
No one cares about Lost.
Show's awesome. It's weird, but it's awesome.
So sucks. Battlestar Galactica all the way.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up. I'm gonna drag you until I wear your Texas ass out. That game is awesome. And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.